Hello, boys and girls. Welcome to another edition of the Rip City Report. I am Joe Freeman of the Oregonian. He's Casey Holdall of Trailblazers.com.
Hello, hello. Back at it.
What's up, Case?
Not much. Just enjoying the beautiful sights and sounds of the dungeon here at the Moda Center.
Yeah, they... You know, I guess I shouldn't say that they should put windows in here because it would be highly distracting, but it would be nice.
Yeah. You know, I think part of the... of the kind of the personality of broadcasters, particularly radio broadcasters, is that you're in a closed case that, you know, like the entire world is cut off from you, and it's just you speaking to the listeners,
and they are hanging on your every
word, and it's just you broadcasting to the world and Orson Welles and War of the Worlds and so on and so forth. I don't know where I was going with that.
No, I like it.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, so we're back for more. We had fun doing our first one, so we're going to have fun doing our second one. We'll get into a lot of Blazers talk here coming up. Now, before we do that, though, this is we're a couple days removed from Thanksgiving. How was your Thanksgiving?
It was a very nice Thanksgiving. Got in the night before, or I should say the early morning before, from the road trip from Phoenix. Fortunately, the Trailblazers lost that one, but no big deal. Not to be unexpected, I guess. Got home. We had family over to our house. My wife did the bulk of the cooking and did a fantastic job.
As always.
Turkey was fantastic. Mashed potatoes and the stuffing were spot on. I'm a real... I take chances from a culinary perspective when I'm eating out and about, but for me, like Thanksgiving, you have to come with like I want the standard Thanksgiving stuff. So like,
now what's your favorite Thanksgiving item?
Probably stuffing. I love stuffing, and I love eating turkey, mashed potatoes, and stuffing after Thanksgiving as well.
Oh yeah,
like just to mash it all together. And
oh,
big thing. Yeah, no, huh. I don't. Once the initial meal is over, that's the end of the separate things for me. After that, I put them all together.
So. Now, what about, are you a turkey sandwich kind of guy?
I don't mind turkey sandwiches. I would typically prefer to have, if there's mashed potatoes left, I'm eating that turkey with mashed potatoes. So, and while I'm not averse to taking some turkey and mashed potatoes and stuffing and rolling up in a burrito and eating that as well. So that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. It's fantastic. It's a little south of the border.
A Thanksgiving burrito.
Yes, exactly.
It's
great. So yeah, that's how I prefer to consume my post Thanksgiving. But it was a very nice Thanksgiving. We had a family over. It was very nice. How about you, Joe?
I had a fantastic Thanksgiving. I went to some family of mine for a couple hours to hang out. It's actually some new family members that I didn't know that lived here in Portland.
Oh.
Turns out my grandfather's sister, so I guess that's my aunt? I guess she would be my aunt. Yes,
aunt?
My aunt,
yeah.
Ethel. Yeah. She lives here, and her daughter lives, or her son lives here, and then their children live here. And so there's this whole clan out there that I never knew about until recently. And so I shared a little bit of time with them. And then I went to do what I do regularly. I hung out with my dear friends, Dave and Lisa.
They invited
me and my wife, Alana, over for Thanksgiving. And we crushed it. Just absolutely crushed it.
Fantastic. Yeah. How many kids named Ethel do you think are born these days?
I would say that
it's got to be down to like 100.
0.003 of the population or something. It can't be. Maybe that's high.
I think that's super high. There are quite a few women's names that I feel like they're on the verge of becoming extinct. Yeah.
Huh.
Like, men's names have pretty much
come and go,
kind of the same throughout the years. But I feel like names like Ethel, Phyllis,
Ella,
Blanche. See, I think Ella's a little bit on the uptick, actually.
One of my grandmother's names.
I've known a couple of baby girls named Ella, so.
I don't know. I saw something the other day. I don't recall what the girl name was, but I guess the most popular boy name for new babies last year was Jackson, which surprised me.
I'm not going to
pass judgment on it,
but... There has been an uptick amongst the millennials, as we are called, when it comes to naming your kids after president names.
Uh-huh.
I feel like there's a lot of Jacksons, a lot of Lincolns, not many Tafts or Fillmores running around, but still, like, I think it's picked up steam throughout the years, and I'm not a huge fan of it personally. But
I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of Bushes or Obamas.
Yeah.
Those aren't very good first
names. I bet in 15 years from now, you're going to see a bunch of kids named Obama running around.
Really? First name?
Well, at least Barack.
Barack. I could see Barack. But Obama, I'd be a...
Yeah, but that's a little tough, actually. Obama Smith.
That's, you know, that's amazing. When I said Obama a minute ago, a name, the first name that popped in my head was Obama Smith.
Yeah. Well,
that's kind of weird, actually.
Yeah, that is a little weird. Not in the, but like any of this conversation hasn't been a little bit strange already.
True.
To start our basketball related podcast.
Right.
Here,
so. Oh, yeah. I guess we're here to talk about Blazers.
In theory,
so
yeah.
Let's talk a little Blazers.
Yeah, let's do that. Why not?
Boy, so we should say it is Tuesday afternoon, mm-hmm. so we are recording this on Tuesday. We are hours away from the Blazers' home game against the Oklahoma City Thunder, yet another test. And boy, did they handle their most recent test last night against the Pacers. That was an excellent ball game to watch, to be in the building, to feel the vibe that was going on. Really kind of had a playoff atmosphere, I thought.
Yeah.
And really, it looked like two teams who were legitimate playoff contenders. But what did you take away from that game?
For me, what I took away from it, when the Trailblazers, I think they were down 5, 6, 7, or 8 in the third quarter. You know, a part of me thought, not that they were going to fold, but, you know, that against a team like the Pacers, you know, maybe you're not going to be able to pull this one out, and you still played a fantastic game. But, you know, I was not expecting once they got down even, you know, like low or mid single digits. I was kind of thinking that was it. And the fact that they were able to come back and get over the hump, which is something they've had difficulty doing this year. In the fourth quarter, mm-hmm. by the way, didn't have a lead in that game until the fourth quarter. I came away from that game really feeling like, you know, I've been a pretty big believer in this team anyways, but they showed, I think, a certain level of determination and fortitude last night that I think even I was a little surprised by. Hmm. And
you know what I would call it? And I tried to at some level mention this in my gamer, but I thought it was toughness. And,
yeah.
and I thought what this team has showed to this point is they are a heck of a lot tougher than anyone expected. And you know, last night was kind of the typical clash of styles. You had the rough and rugged and relentless defense of the Pacers. And, man, I saw them. I went to Indy last week to do a story on Nate McMillan, the Blazers' former coach, and I watched them play the Timberwolves. And they just beat the hell out of the Timberwolves. I mean, there was after the game, it was so gnarly. There was barely any, like, hey, I'll give you dap and see you next game and all that stuff. The Timberwolves were pissed, and they walked off like they went immediately to the locker room, just immediately done. And I think that's the presence that the Pacers have. They kind of inflict that will on teams, and they're so physical and so rugged. So you had that going against the Blazers, who are kind of this free-flowing, offensive-minded, fun-to-watch kind of work of art, mm-hmm. so to speak. And so you kind of pitted those two styles, and I thought the Blazers both inflicted their own will, but also had a little bit of the Pacers' characteristics.
Yeah.
I think they really kind of out-toughed them when it was all said and done.
I think you're right about that. And I guess one of my other takeaways, too, which is kind of in that same vein, is that, you know, there's this idea that Trailblazers are out winning games because, you know, they're shooting threes and, you know, like they're kind of a finesse-type mm-hmm. offensive team and they're beating teams with their offense. But, you know, and so, you know, within that narrative, you expect when you're going to begin to a team like the Pacers that are, you know, hard-nosed and take away those things you like to do, that, you know, they're going to be able to kind of stunt what the Trailblazers are able to do offensively. That was not the case last night. And I think it shows that, you know, this Trailblazer team isn't just a team that's shooting, you know, 41% as a team from three-point land, and that's why they're winning games. Mm-hmm. You know, it's because they have a varied offensive repertoire that they use that, you know, when one thing isn't working, they can go to something else.
Mm-hmm.
And when that starts to slow down, they can go to something else, or they can go back to what they would initially do. And I think we saw that last night with...
Would they make up 5 threes all game?
Yeah, it wasn't much.
7?
Yeah,
I can't remember off the top of my head.
Paul George hit 5 threes in, you know, the last 3 minutes of the
yeah.
game. And, yeah, so it wasn't a game that the Trailblazers came out and just were throwing shots in, you know, from half court
mm-hmm.
and winning that game. They did it through offensive execution that was outside of the realm of, well, they got to open 3-pointer, so they hit it, and that's kind of what they were able to get the victory for.
Right.
So, I mean, that's me. I think, you know, being that it was such an exciting game, and I think people did kind of pay attention to it, at least after some of the other games got over. I think the Bulls went to triple overtime last night. I know
mm-hmm.
that the Spurs won on a game winner from Tim Duncan. So I think once those games were over, people turned maybe to the
that late-night West Coast
exactly.
game.
And I think they saw that, yeah, you know, this Trailblazer Trailblazer team is not maybe the kind of
soft.
Happy-go-lucky.
They're not soft.
I won't even say that I think people thought they were soft, but I think that there is a notion that maybe they were a bit gimmicky, at least, you know? And I think that the victory last night and the way they did it kind of shows that they're not. That these things that they're doing aren't necessarily flukes. They're actually the product of a system that works, particularly against a team like the Pacers that, you know, they want to kind of force you into some of those lower percentage shots, but the Trailblazers hit those low percentage shots at a higher clip than other teams do. So,
hey, the Blazers punked the Pacers last year at the Rose Garden.
Yeah, they beat them by 20 last year. Exactly.
And so, I mean, I don't know what it is about this matchup, but the Pacers were surrendering something like 86 and change points on the season per game on average. The Blazers put up 106 on them.
Yeah.
We're talking about the best defense in the NBA. And, you know, all season it's kind of been a fine line of, yeah, it's early, and is this team really as good as they've shown? And from my perspective, I've really kind of just tried to take it for what it is and not make too much of it, because it is early, and we really don't know what this team is down the road. But, boy, the more and more you watch them, the more and more impressed you are. And the more and more you start to believe that they might actually just be good.
Yeah.
That this might not be a fluke. And kind of the point that you're making is they have enough different pieces that they can play different styles mm-hmm. when they need to. And, yes, they would like to push the pace, and they would like to get into their flow offense and just run circles around people and make the extra pass and shoot threes and all that stuff. But if that isn't working like it wasn't last night, or if it's being taken away from them, they have enough pieces and enough options to go in a different direction. And I think that often gets lost amid what they are doing, is that they are multidimensional, and they aren't just a one-trick pony.
Yeah.
And when you have LaMarcus playing at the level that he is playing at right now and doing the things that he's doing, that opens up so much, and that gives you that inside force that maybe some other teams don't have. So.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think to beat a team like the Pacers, I think you have to have a player like LaMarcus who's going to make their post players work. So, I mean, David West and Roy Herbert last night had to work. I mean, mm-hmm. they had decent offensive games, and at a certain point they were deferring a little bit to Paul George, I think, offensively, because he was playing out of his mind. But having a guy like LaMarcus who's going to make those guys work and pull them away from the basket as well, which is something, you know, a lot of other power forwards aren't really doing. It's, you know, they're getting more of their points in the paint and mm-hmm. around the basket, which allows, you know, which is good in general to, I think, for your offense. But on a game-to-game basis, when you're playing a team like the Pacers, who, you know, they have those guys in the post, that if you're trying to open things up for everyone else on the team, having someone like LaMarcus pull those guys out is infinitely helpful. And one other thing I wanted to say is about last night's game that I thought was really that I noticed was I thought the Blazers bench in the Lakers game was a bit shaky,
mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, that's kind of...
That happens at the Staples Center.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, you look at that game and they're up by 17, and that was early, so you kind of figure that's not going to last. But when you're up 20 into the fourth quarter, you assume you're going to be able to hold on to that. Bench came in, like I said, had some issues, kind of gave up a lot of that lead. But last night, I thought they responded incredibly well. They I think it was basically the bench unit and Damian Lillard started the fourth quarter,
mm-hmm.
and I think they were tied at 72 to start the fourth quarter. And they came.
They took control of the game.
Yeah, they pushed the lead. And it was Thomas Robinson and Joel Freeland and Mo Williams, who I thought had a great game last night.
Absolutely,
particularly from the mid range. He late in that game, or in the early part of the fourth quarter, at least,
hit six straight points, three straight buckets.
He really kind of allowed those guys to get a rest. And also, you know, you kind of assume that, especially against a team like the Pacers, you put in your bench. And they're, you know, you want them to hold serve a little bit, if nothing else. And you're not really expecting them to come in and maybe push the lead out on a team like the Pacers. And they were able to do that. And I thought that put the Trailblazers in a position late in that game to put their starters back in. I think they did a line change, I think, at around the 5-minute mark when LaMarcus and Batum and Wesley Matthews went back in. And you could tell the crowd realized it, too. And I think even Terry mentioned in the post game that, you know, that
Thomas Robinson got a huge, well-deserved ovation.
Yeah, for those guys when they came out, because they realized that,
Mo,
you know, that was not an insignificant thing for those guys to do. So kudos to the bench last night as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, one thing also, and we'll move on to something else after this, but one thing that that game revealed is yet another way or another illustration of that this team can beat you in a variety of ways. They're winning games in multiple different ways. We've had comeback victories against the Bulls and the Suns. We've seen that. They've beat offensive-minded teams like Golden State at Golden State, San Antonio at home. They've won with defense. They've played wild, ridiculous games like the Lakers, that game there. And they've won with their defense, and they've beaten different styles of opponents as well. And so I just think it legitimizes what they're doing more when you can beat teams in a variety of ways like they are. And the more they stack their resume with this type of stuff, the more believers they're going to make, I guess.
And the other part of that, too, I would say, I believe that at this point they've won, I think, 8 games when they've shot under 40%, which...
It's stunning.
It's stunning. That's defense. That's defense on one hand, but two, it also, just going back to what I was saying earlier, it's proof that they're not a team that has to go out and
shoot
up 115 points to beat you. They can beat you 85-90. Mm-hmm.
But that said, there's not a lot of teams that are holding them to 85-90.
No, exactly. Yeah. So. Now, as soon as I said that, I was like, I'm looking at the schedule here. I don't think.
What's their lowest scoring game?
I think their lowest scoring winning output was 90. Yeah, it was 90 against the Suns. That 90-89 victory, and they scored 91 against the Bucks.
I was
going to
say Milwaukee. So, I feel like was their low scoring game too.
Absolutely. Well, moving on a little bit to just the composition of this team, talking about chemistry of this team, you had mentioned it in our little pre-chat here, that this team, and I think kind of some of the quotes from LaMarcus Aldridge have been indicative of this, a team that seems like they're enjoying each other's company and believing in each other more than past teams. And even from a coaching perspective, too, I think that's happening a little bit. I think LaMarcus was on Jim Rome today, and he had mentioned that they thought that Terry Stotts trusted the players a little more this year, and which makes sense, being that he's in his second year now. So, just want to talk a little bit about just how this team is getting along. And on one hand, you kind of feel like, they're winning, and everything is kind of nice and puppy dogs and lollipops when you're winning. But it does seem like a team that really trusts each other and enjoys each other. I was talking to Thomas Robinson after the game, the Pacer game, and he was saying, I was asking about the bench unit, and he was saying, the reason that this team is different than other teams he's been on is that there really doesn't seem to be that delineation between, these guys are the starters and these guys are the bench guys. I mean, there obviously is, and to a certain extent, the way that you have to go about operating as a team is to have kind of a little bit of separation, at least when you're practicing. But, he stressed that, a lot of times maybe guys have issues coming off the bench because everyone wants to start. Everyone wants to kind of be in that limelight. And he was just saying that, their bench unit doesn't really feel that way, and that they're happy to get in the game and to help those starters out. And they don't view it so much as, man, I need to play well so I can be a starter. They view it more as, we need to play well so we can help our starters out, so when they come back in, we haven't let them down. And I think that kind of speaks to the chemistry of this team a little bit, and just they seem to be building a little something. And, I would say probably the best indication will be when they do have some hard times and how that locker room stays together. But it seems like right now it's a tight-knit group.
It's humming along, yeah. Chemistry is something that you can't really describe or quantify or really relay in those kinds of terms. But you know it when you see it. When you see good chemistry, you know that there's good chemistry. And when you see bad chemistry, you know there's bad chemistry. And, this is, I think for both of us, it's the seventh season that we've covered. And what this team, the way that this team has gelled together reminds me a lot of the first two teams that I covered. The 2007-08 team that had the 13-game winning streak and really kind of planted the foundation for the three seasons of success that followed. That was an amazingly close team. And the team that followed it was even more close. And it was almost like, and that was a more innocent time back in days of yore.
Those young, innocent days.
But it really was kind of like a college atmosphere more so back then. And I really think that chemistry helped that team win 54 games. It was a huge part of that. And it's still early. There's 18 games here. But I sense a lot of similar, minus the college atmosphere, I sense a lot of similar characteristics with this team. I mean, over the years, I have seen so many players pout or get upset at their playing time or their role or for whatever reason, and there have been many in their own minds. I wouldn't say that they sabotage the team, but you could see their displeasure and you could see its effect mm-hmm. and how it wore on teams.
And some of the guys who are still on the team now have been those guys in the past. Not necessarily like
outwardly, but outwardly.
But I mean, they've been guys who, you know, grumbled from time to time.
Yeah. So I haven't seen any of that. Mm-hmm. And certainly when you're 15-3, I mean, what you don't have a lot to be mad about.
No.
But, you know, even again, it's hard to describe, but what that does in the grand scheme of things is that closeness and that togetherness, you see that carry over onto the court. And you mentioned Stotts, and that's interesting that who did you say said that? Was that Robinson or? No, it was LaMarcus.
Yeah.
It was LaMarcus who said that Stotts seems to trust the team more. That's one of Terry's big things is his quote-unquote trust the pass. And you're seeing that all develop in this because the Blazers have been amazingly fun to watch.
Yes, absolutely.
Their offense has been dynamic and it's humming along. And the traits that it is showing that are most impressive to me is they are unselfish. They trust one another. They don't care who scores and when they score. And they pick their points when they think they can score or do whatever they need to do to help the team win. And I think you're seeing this chemistry that we talked about carry over to the court. And that's where it's most important. Yes, it's nice behind the scenes for the guys to get along and for there not to be internal bickering and all that. But when it carries over to the court like it has, that's why they're 15-3. And that's why you're seeing this. Now, as you pointed out, when that first streak of adversity pops, that's where we're going to see how close this team really is. But I bet if and I haven't asked these guys this in a while, but I bet if you asked LaMarcus or if you asked Wesley or you asked Nick, the guys who have been around for a while, I bet they would say it's as close a team as they've seen.
Yeah, well, LaMarcus said that in Golden State after that victory in Oakland.
After the fight?
But, yeah, after the you know, because I asked him to compare those two teams. I was, you know, more through the context of the winning streak. And what he said, he was like, you know, it's not that, you know, that was a good team in its own right, and I don't want to take anything away from that team because it was special. But he said, you know, this team is different than that. Like, mm-hmm. it seems like that team in 2007 still had, you know, young players are still trying to make their names in the league a little bit. And this team is older than that team, as you had mentioned. And I think, you know, that even I think that team might have been more of a product of their winning, and so we're close. This team to me seems more like a product of we want to win,
mm-hmm.
so let's be close, mm-hmm. you know. And I think that, as you mentioned, it really is manifesting itself more on the court mm-hmm. than it did even back then. Because back then it was still LaMarcus and Brandon, and you know, to a lesser extent Travis. And I mean, those guys were still doing the majority of the scoring, and Brandon Roy, his brand of basketball is
it's
not as open to kind of that trust in the pass and to being more of a just of an unselfish team. And I'm not saying that Brandon's a selfish player, but just it's just a different style of basketball. It's an isolation brand of basketball. And this team is that's not how they play. You know, it is a. I mean, you see the ball moving around with this team, and like they are making passes that like the even those of us who follow the team all the time. I'm not expecting them to make that pass. It's like that's such a
wait. Where did that come from?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, and we'll have to start tracking more of these hockey assists because I know they're doing that now with
SportsVU.
With SportsVU, but yeah, I mean that game against the Lakers in particular, like they're when they were building those leads, like they're. That ball was getting to a guy, and it was right out. And they knew exactly where the guy was going to be at, and they'd throw it to him even without a second thought about it. And sometimes in the past, when you can kind of fake ball movement a mm-hmm. little bit, and you know when you don't necessarily trust each other the way that maybe this team does, you move the ball around, but you're still thinking, you know, I want this ball to come back mm-hmm. to me because I want to get this shot. This team, it doesn't – it's not the way it is. Like, it's – it's going. And I think something that I've noticed, especially early in games, and it happened last night as well, you know, if you're a selfish team and you've got LaMarcus Aldridge, Damian Lillard, Wesley Matthews, and Nick Batum, Robin Lopez isn't getting a whole bunch of shots in the first quarter. Mm-hmm. And that's happening a lot. And it's to the point where there's almost sometimes where I'm like, you guys are passing to Robin too much.
Well, man, for no a little offense, while Robin, there last night, it looked like we were going to have the battle of the centers. Yeah, I think they took like 12 shots in the first quarter or something ridiculous. I don't remember, but... Yeah.
And I think that that's a good indication of just where this team is at and how unselfish they are. And, you know, I keep saying unselfish, but it's because the players keep saying that. You know,
right.
It's what
I see.
It is. It's probably the main reason why they have been as good as they have been. I think if you want to get to like the 2,000 feet level, it's not that they're hitting three-pointers. It's not that, you know, they're even playing great defense. It's that they're an unselfish team, and they're not expecting anything but to make the right play to get someone the shot. And if it happens to be them, great. And if it's someone else, that's just as good too. And I think, you know, it breeds that brand of basketball they're playing right now, which is, I mean, it's more fun than any of the other teams that I've covered here in Portland.
Absolutely. And a lot of what you see, a benefit of this closeness and this chemistry, is guys are accepting their roles. And, you know, Thomas Robinson doesn't play that much. Joel Freeland doesn't play that much. I mean, the starters still play the majority of the minutes, but each guy is willing to do whatever he does, like you mentioned earlier with Thomas Robinson, when he gets on the floor. And even down at the 14th, 15th man level, I mean, I have seen in the past guys gripe and incessantly about how they want to play. Myers Leonard has barely played all season, and I haven't heard him complain once. Will Barton, same thing.
And Will's the kind of guy, too, where you know him and you think,
this guy wants to play.
I know Will wants to be out there, yeah. But like,
he worked, I mean, he brought it in the offseason. And in his own mind, he was working his tail off because he had a role. Mm-hmm. He saw a spot at a two guard that he was ready to play. And so to then step back and be able to check yourself is impressive, and particularly for those two guys who are second year players. Mm-hmm. So I think we've covered that, but it'll be something to watch and to monitor. But early indications is that this is shaping up to be as close, if not the closest team that I've covered in my seven
seasons.
Absolutely.
And I think one of the reasons why, and I think this is, you know, a good segue here, is that LaMarcus Aldridge, from a leadership perspective, is completely
night
different
and day
than he's ever been.
Night and day.
And it's not. I mean, it's, you know, you don't want to say that he's so much better now, because it makes it out to be that he wasn't even decent before, and he was. But I mean, like, it's like you said, it's night and day. And I know you had that story earlier or in the preseason where I think both Terry Stotts and Neil O'Shea said something.
We wanted multiple leaders.
It's not LaMarcus's team. You know, I don't know about that. This sure as heck feels to me like LaMarcus Aldridge's team.
At this point, there's no question.
And it's because of the way he's grown as a person and as a leader. I think maybe before...
I think the last couple seasons, he has entered the year with well intentions to be this leader. And he's talked about needing to be a leader. I don't know if he was equipped or exactly knew how to go about that. And so I think it was clear to other people, or maybe even to himself, that he was forcing it. And he was trying too hard to be this leader. And you either are a leader or you're not. And he's not forcing it now. He's just – and he's more comfortable with himself, I think. I think he's more comfortable with his standing in the organization. And look, I don't care what he says. I don't care what Neil says. I don't care what anybody says. He was definitely unhappy in the summer, and a lot of that stuff got blown up, and there was a lot of erroneous information, but LaMarcus wanted to see changes.
Yeah.
And the changes that he asked for, he got. And so at some level, that has to infuse your confidence and infuse your standing with the organization, and at some level tell you that, okay, I'm the guy here, and maybe it solidifies your standing, or it makes you more comfortable with who you are in the team, or just fuels your confidence all that more. I don't know, but there has definitely been a transformation in LaMarcus, in his demeanor, in his dealings with everyone, and you see it on the court too, and the way that he The Lakers, when they got up huge against the Lakers, and we sit baseline kind of behind the basket in an awful seat at Staples.
Yeah, I couldn't see anything that was happening on the right side of the court from my seat.
Oh, because the stanchion is there.
Anytime Wesley Matthews did something, I was like, yep.
Let's see if that goes. Oh, that
was doing something, but I can't see it.
But the Blazers were cruising. They were building a big lead, and I think it was maybe a fast break layup, and someone got fouled, and guys started to spread, and LaMarcus was like, no, 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 no. And he kind of pulled his hands out and said, come here, and he gathered everybody into a huddle. And I don't know what he said, but I would imagine it was something to the effect of, it's still the first quarter, there's a lot of game left, let's keep this momentum going. And it's just something that you wouldn't have seen from him in the past. And it's little things like that that establish your street cred, if you will, as a leader.
Absolutely. And I think, to me, and I don't want to try to get into LaMarcus's head too much here because there's no point trying to do that.
No.
But it seems to me that maybe he had the idea that, like, well, being a leader in the NBA means that, you know, like, I'm a Kevin Garnett or I'm a Kobe Bryant, you know, or I'm kind of like a big kind of, I don't know what the best, I won't say a negative personality, but you know, like, I'm on
domineering.
Guys. Exactly. Like, I'm kind of cracking the whip and telling guys what to do. And I think that it took him, you know, some time to realize that it's like, no, it is. There's a different kind. There are different kinds of leaders in the world, and particularly in sports. And I need to figure out the kind of leadership that best fits with my personality, which is a little more laid back, you know, and a little more contrite. And I think that he's done that by just talking with players, you know, like and like you said, being. You know, like being the guy who sets things up, but not necessarily the guy who is, you know, he's not yelling at guys. He's not saying, you know, you did this wrong. He'll
pull guys aside and say stuff.
Yeah, and he'll correct. Exactly. Because, and this was something I was thinking about today. LaMarcus, I don't know if people realize how intelligent he is from a basketball perspective. Like he
knows the game.
He understands the game incredibly well. And I, you know, I don't watch a ton of practice or shoot around or anything like that, but the few times I do, I'm always taken aback by how LaMarcus always knows where guys are supposed to be at. He always knows why something didn't work or when a mistake was made. And if someone asks a question, LaMarcus, you can always tell he's like, it's that way or it's this. That's what you're supposed to do. Like I don't think people realize how savvy he is from a basketball perspective. And I think that, you know, he's better at maybe expressing himself now, and I think it's led to the team kind of falling
behind him a little bit in
that respect. And that's not to say that, you know, that guys aren't looking to Damian in the locker room, they're not looking to Wes in the locker room, because I think they are.
Absolutely.
And I think that's important for LaMarcus to have other guys who can, you know, shoulder that load a little bit. But I think, you know,
LaMarcus is your best player.
Yeah, he
and
is.
You need him to be a leader. And that's what he's doing. Quite frankly,
yeah.
And it's the first time that I've seen that combination from him, and it kind of brings up another subject of, you can be a leader and say all you want, but you also need to be a pretty good player if you're going to have the role he has. And I think LaMarcus is playing the best basketball of his career, all told, right now. And the Western Conference Player of the Month, I expect that to be announced on Wednesday, and it's Tuesday right now again, so we don't know how that will come. But my understanding is the three finalists are LaMarcus, Kevin Durant, and Kevin Love. And It's a debate right now to who should get it. Let me tell you their stats right now as of today. Kevin Love is averaging 23.7 points, 13.6 rebounds, and 4.1 assists. Kevin Durant is averaging 28.3 points, which is ridiculous. 8.1 rebounds, 5.5 assists, 1.4 steals. And LaMarcus is averaging 22.7 points, 9.6 boards, really close to that 10 that he wants to get to, 2.4 assists, and almost a block a game. And I think that statistics-wise, it's hard to argue that Kevin Durant has been the best player of the month so far. Excuse me. By the way, I'm battling a cold, so please forgive my raspy voice and
never.
Any coughs that may come.
No forgiveness.
But I think LaMarcus has made a genuine case, not just by his play, but because the Blazers are far exceeding expectations, whereas the Thunder were expected to do well in November. So I'm curious about your thoughts. Who do you think deserves that? Who's going to win it?
Well, a couple of things there. One, I always think it's a little unfair to base awards off of what expectations were, just in that it's like, I wouldn't want to take anything away from Kevin Durant just because people know the Thunder are a good team and they're supposed to be good. And that's one of those things where whenever people vote for whatever an award is, and they're like, well, people didn't expect this to happen, so we should vote for that guy. It's like, well, that's because you don't know what you're talking about, you know? Like, and so, like, you shouldn't necessarily reward something because you didn't get it right in the first place. I've always thought that was kind of like a very...
Cop out almost?
Well, it puts the emphasis on you and not on the players, you know, because you're basically basing it off of what you thought, which you might have been working off of faulty information in the first place.
True.
Neither here nor there. For me, it's got to be either Durant or LaMarcus. You know, I think Kevin Love is putting up great numbers, but, you know... Minnesota is 9-10 right now, and they're allowing 100 and or almost 102 points a game, which is 23rd best in the NBA. You know, I think if, you know, defensively, LaMarcus is a better player right now defensively than Kevin Love is, and I think the Kevin Love is probably a more varied offensive player, mm-hmm. Particularly because he is able to shoot from outside, which I think LaMarcus could do if he really wanted to, but he's just not gonna. That's not him.
We disagree on that. I still don't think LaMarcus can turn into a guy who's firing up threes.
Well, I don't think he can. I think he could if he wanted to. I just don't think. I think he already spends enough time away from the basket to where he probably thinks to himself, if I start shooting three pointers, people are gonna harass me for now until the end of time. So
they won't if he shoots 50%.
Yeah, true enough. But I think it really I think you have to with it when it comes to awards like this, I've always thought that you have to give preference to the players on teams that are playing well. And you know, the fact that Trailblazers are playing well outside of what everyone thought they were going to do. I don't even enter that into the metric really when I think about who should get that award.
They're still lead the West.
Yeah,
regardless
exactly,
of all that.
Exactly. It doesn't matter if people thought they were going to be the best team in the Western Conference. As of right now, they have the best record in the Western Conference. So, you know, it's hard to...
Flip a coin.
I mean...
Durant has the street cred.
I think if you're talking about who the better player is, I think it's
Kevin Durant.
Yeah. But I think you
Who's
have
meant
to,
more to his team?
In that regard, I think it's LaMarcus Aldridge.
It's still an argument there, too,
think,
though. You know, take Kevin Durant away from the Thunder.
If you take Kevin Durant from the Thunder, you know, they're not anywhere near what they are. But they got at least one other All-Star in Russell Westbrook and then, you know, another borderline All-Star in Serge Ibaka that I think could kind of keep that team afloat.
Well, LA away. You've got Dame and Nick
well,
and Wes.
But you know, as much as I love the guy, but then you're starting either Joel Friedland or Thomas Robinson at you
True.
Know, your
Good
power
point.
Forward. And I think that from the position as well, he's harder to replace. If you want to just get into that argument about, you know, if you take a guy off a team, I think that, you know, not you don't replace a Kevin Durant by any stretch of the imagination, but I think you can bring in someone who's going to volume score for you and – you know, they'll probably be able to kind of bail water for a while. I think if you take LaMarcus off this team, I mean, this returns to the team that I think you kind of saw during the end of last season when they lost 13 straight. So
that's a good point. Did Durant's – do you remember – did he any game winners? I don't remember him doing anything like, you know.
Nothing coming to
so neither guy has any of that going for him.
No.
I don't know. I really don't know. It could go either way.
I didn't really even think about it until you brought it up. But yeah, I mean, it could be LaMarcus.
LaMarcus might win. He really might win. I mean, the Blazers, based upon what they did on the court, based upon what he did on the court, he has a legitimate case.
Yes, he does, and I don't know why. Maybe it's just because I've been wrapped up in how well the team has been playing. But yeah, I didn't really even consider that from a national level as well, at least especially from the Western Conference. That it's just ridiculous, by the way, too. Like the
are there two teams with
all the breakouts of wins and losses.
It's staggering.
Yeah, it's one of those things where if it doesn't shape up here in the next couple of years, like maybe you got to start thinking about some kind of realignment or something.
I think you need to do that anyway because you have the Thunder playing in the Northwest. I mean,
well, divisionally, yes, that should happen already.
Yeah,
if you want to talk about realigning divisions, yes, that should have happened long ago. But I was talking about conference wise as well. And you
just
know, those,
to make it
those
more
teams are going to get better, and you know, a lot of them are trying to lose on purpose so they can get better. Which you know, that's a conversation for another day. But
true.
But yeah, just what those guys are doing in the West right now, what teams are doing in the West right now, you know, really does need to be appreciated. And
were there two teams with losing records? Is that all in the standings in the West? What are the West standings today?
Let me see.
I'm going to look this up right now. Yeah. See who wins. I won. There are three teams with losing records in the entire conference, and one of them is Minnesota, who's 9-10. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. And that's why when people are talking about records and so on and so forth, it's like, well, what do you expect them to do? They're feasting on Eastern Conference teams, but it's the whole dang conference, you know? Like, I mean, like, unless
they're
you're talking
alone.
About Miami or the Pacers at this point, it's like, yeah, any team we play, we should beat at this point. Not that, I mean, it's the NBA and you can get beat on any night, but, you know, there's no teams that outside of those top two that you can really hang your hat on beating. So, like, the fact that, you know, people keep pointing out about the Trailblazers record, which I think they're going to be doing less and less of here as this week goes on, especially.
But yeah.
The fact that they were doing it before is kind of farcical to me.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple interesting stats about the Blazers that aren't worth a full conversation, but I think are telling to how good they've been. Is they're 8-2 on the road, which is ridiculous, and they're 10-0 in back-to-backs. 10-0.
Is it 10? I thought they were 9-0 before the game last night.
Yeah.
And they haven't lost a game in a back-to-back. I stopped myself from saying it because I was like, that can't be right.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense is why you would think that. Yeah.
Yeah, which did you say I think they're 8-0 against the East at this point now?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, I believe with the win last night, either 8-0 or 9-0 against the East. So, again, they're really able to – and I guess those are the kind of stats that you can put together when you've only lost three games anyways.
Right.
Like everything is going to be
– it'll all work itself out.
Yeah. I mean, one thing about LaMarcus, too, though, real quick, just getting back to that, I thought that Joel Odom or maybe it was Seth Prince, actually, someone at your reputable newspaper, The Oregonian, tweeted last night that it was Joel Odom. Yeah, I think the Blazers are 12-0 when LaMarcus has at least six rebounds and 0-3 when he doesn't.
Yeah,
which that's a fantastic stat.
I guess that explains it all. The magic bullet right there.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that goes to show how important he is to this team, because even something as, you know, kind of theoretically benign as three rebounds, when he doesn't get those, Trailblazers don't win. So,
speaking of LaMarcus, how about the little Twitter exchange between him and Hibbert? I mean, he did take a couple of tough shots to the, you know what, there. Yeah, I mean, that didn't look fun, but it looked like Hibbert was going at him at first, in a passive aggressive kind of way.
And I thought LaMarcus is
he handled it okay.
He handled it just fine, but I thought LaMarcus was. I wouldn't say he was offended by it, but
there was a little Twitter beef at first.
When you throw in the real talk line, like, that's when you want someone to know, like, hey,
stuff's getting real.
I'm not kidding around here, all right? Like, I'm not trying to knee you in the genitals, bro. So,
yeah.
Which, you know, and when you're 7'2" and you're trying
tall.
To go straight up, you're going to take some every now and then, you know? So, I mean, I do not want to get kneed anywhere in that general vicinity anyways.
I don't want to get kneed anywhere, but
anywhere,
especially
really.
There.
So I understand what old Roy Hibbert's saying, but on the other hand, it's like, but man, you're coming down too. Like, you're fouling at the same time. And I remember, like, when he was getting complained that he was getting into the calls, it's like,
what are you going to do?
Yeah, it's, you know, that's part of the game. You know, I guess always wear a cup then if it's that much of a concern for you, which...
Yeah.
I do not, once again, do not blame it at all for him being a concern, but, you know, I can't imagine the kind of wherewithal one would have in the fourth quarter of a game when you're driving to the basket being like, oh, okay, I'm going to need this
I'm
guy.
Gonna
I'm
going
to need this guy in the balls here when I'm going up for the shot. I mean, like that.
It's
like,
time for the nut kick.
Like there was a Golden State fan who was complaining to me after the little altercation there that Joel Friedland grabbed the arm that Andrew Bogut had surgically repaired and that was a reason why he was so mad about it. And it's like,
yeah,
you really
right.
think Joel Friedland is thinking to himself, oh, the right arm is the one he had that he had surgery on, so I'm going to pull on that when we're fighting for rebound position. It's like, no, the guys aren't thinking that.
No.
Like, I guess on one hand, you respect the notion that fans think these guys are so intelligently advanced that they can think about those things in a snap
on the fly.
Second. But, you know, they're just playing ball, you know? Like, and sometimes, you know, you grab a guy's arm, sometimes... You knee a guy in the midsection, and, you know.
And then you have some Twitter beef.
Yeah, and then you have a little Twitter tete-a-tete, and everyone pats themselves on the back afterward. But, you know,
it looked like they resolved it and everything went fine. And apparently they plan to meet in the NBA Finals.
Yeah,
so
yeah. You know,
that's what it's come to, ladies and gentlemen.
I made fun of Chris Haynes for mentioning that the other night.
As and then, well you should. It's a ridiculous notion.
And then they're talking about themselves. So, yeah, who am I to say they're not going to meet in the finals this year?
Well, they are 15-3, so... well, we went really long last week, so we're going to try to go a little shorter this time around. So barring anything else that you have, I say we get on to our food rec or something of that nature. Do you have a food rec for the week? Or
boy,
You don't have one?
Well, I mean, besides my wife's turkey that was fantastic,
How about this? How about I have one I could go with, but maybe we should not do it this week in honor of Thanksgiving and the delicious meals that we both enjoy.
To the family members who work hard.
Yeah. Yes. So thank you, Dave and Lisa, for your hard work. And
thank you, Bonnie. Of course, you will most certainly be listening to this podcast.
Yes.
Yeah. I can't wait to hear my wife's feedback on this because she will definitely be listening to
it. Now, did she give you some feedback after the first one?
No. Let's say I'm being facetious about the interest
she's
level
actually
my wife
listening,
has
yeah.
when it comes to these kind of things. No. So
we are on the same page with that, yeah.
Yeah. Which, you know, I'm perfectly happy with, you know, in some respects.
Nice to get a break.
Exactly, yeah.
It's nice to get a break.
She likes the team, and she enjoys watching basketball, but it is nice to go home and to not talk about work anyways. So
yes, it is. Sometimes joyous.
Yes. Exactly.
Now, what about, have you watched any movies lately, or have you seen?
You know, I did watch, I watched the first half, at least, of the original Old Boy. It's been remade, and it's out now.
I didn't know about
either. Spike Lee remade it with Josh Brolin as the main character. The original one is a Korean film, and it's on Netflix Instant Watch, but it's dubbed. And I can't watch dubbed movies.
No.
I need subtitles. So I rented it on iTunes. It's only 99 cents, and I actually read through. People were pissed off because they thought they were renting the actual one that just came out. but I knew which one I was renting. So, and I watched the first half of it on the flight back from Los Angeles. But then I didn't have a chance to
watch
the second half, and now my rental period is over.
Oh.
So now I'm going to have to go back and rent it again to watch the second half of it. An interesting film for sure. I couldn't really give anything away about it because at the halfway mark, I'm only now kind of starting to figure out where they're
going
with it. The basic premise is that there's this fellow who's somewhat of a degenerate who gets kidnapped for all intents and purposes and gets basically locked into a room for 15 years with little to no contact, and he's drugged at various times during it. And
wow.
My understanding is it's some kind of elaborate revenge fantasy, but again, I've only watched half of the movie, so I wouldn't feel real comfortable in saying one way or another. But the half I did watch was
entertaining.
Good. Yeah, I recommend.
Good.
It's a little violent, but I've mentioned this before to you. When it comes to Korean films especially, they can be violent, but people don't typically die in them, you know, like because there's no gunplay. So it's all guys like hitting each other with 2x4s and kind of flesh wounds with pieces of broken glass and stuff like that. So it's not – even when like there is violence, it's not that like over-the-top like crazy gross violence. Like I tried to watch Prometheus on the flight back. But I was also eating at the time, and I got to
Couldn't
a point in the movie
it.
Where I was like, I'm not watching this while I'm trying to consume food. So,
Okay.
Yeah.
What about you, Joe? My wife, Alana, and I, we went out and watched Catching Fire, the latest installment of the Hunger Games trilogy.
I wanted to go to that with Bonnie, but she has not seen the first, so that kind of
Well, we
that.
Also saw the first, and I actually read all three of the books. It's a trilogy. it was good, and If you read the books, I think that gives you a, you know, kind of a different perspective. Obviously, you either appreciate it more or hate it. But I thought it was good. It would stay true to the book, and it had been a while since I read it, so kind of made me flashback, and I couldn't necessarily remember where everything was going. But is it Jennifer Lawrence? Is that her name?
Yes.
She was in Silver Linings Playbook, and it was hard, and she's Katniss is her role, and. The first time it was hard because I in Hunger Games I didn't really see her as that role, but then I grew to accept her. And this time it was hard because I had seen her in Silver Linings Playbook and other movies, and so it was hard for my mind to take it back to her being a teenage girl. So,
yeah, they got to pound those things out because at this point her ability to play a teenage girl is
quickly evaporating. Yeah, that would be just fine with me because the third book is absolutely terrible. Yeah. It's awful. It's terrible. I know people who read the first two, and the first book is really good. The second book is good. And they started reading the third one, and they couldn't even finish it. And they didn't finish it. And I kind of had to force myself to finish it because I'm going to stick this thing out if it's the end of the trilogy. But if they don't make a third movie, that's all right by me.
They're making a third movie, Joe.
There's money to be made.
This is Hollywood, man. They're making that third movie come hell or high water. So you rest your mind easy on that one.
Okay. All right. Well, before I let you go, we should tout our respective blogs that you can visit and the ways to read and interact with our stuff. So Trailblazer, Casey's stuff is readable at forwardcenter.net on the trailblazers.com website at the Forward Center blog. Again, that's forwardcenter.net. You can also give him a follow on Twitter and @cHold. And my stuff is available at OregonLive.com/Blazers. And you can follow me on Twitter @BlazerFreeman.
Yes,
so give us a follow. Give us a read on our blogs. And come back next time for our podcast. I am Joe Freeman of The Oregonian. He is Casey Holdall of TrailBlazers.com. And we will talk to you next time.